Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Dalen Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And it's 10:30. Do you know where your kids are?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
If you're our parents, we're recording a podcast episode. That will be released tomorrow. So we wanted to do an episode. It's just Maureen and I, if you couldn't tell by now. We wanted to do an episode with Josh earlier. But it ended up panning out, so it's looking like we're
It's not that it didn't pan out, it's that he said he was available, and then we ghosted him.
Well, then you got a phone call from work that you had to go to work, which, like, good on you.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know.
Money.
But today's been a really exciting day, and so we wanted to make sure we recorded an episode at all, even though I'm, like, sleepy. Like, hardcore sleepy.
Right.
But we announced all of our June performances for Scoppy Sessions today, which we're really excited about.
Which is awesome. We're super excited. This has been something that we've been working on for a couple months, maybe even just a month, honestly. But
I think it's been two.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm not sure either. But what's cool is that like, we finally put together the last couple pieces. Yeah. Over the last couple days, it all kind of came together at the 11th hour, because our first performance is in a week.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we were putting the pieces together for a while. I know that it was at least since Bohem was when we were talking about putting the pieces together.
Which was end of April.
Yeah. And I think putting together a performance series is something that we've wanted to do for a while.
Like, absolutely.
It's been entirely a matter of figuring out how to do it, because of the fact that our mission is accessibility, and not just as a buzzword, but trying to...
At every level,
exactly. Honestly. Trying to figure out how to make accessibility actually work for a performance series, and that's why we're hitting so hard with the pay what you can. We don't want to make you feel like, you know, you have to donate if you can't. Like, it's very important that low-income people come and feel like it's not a big deal if you don't donate. Like, yeah, of course you could and maybe should, but, like, if you don't have to. And I think that's kind of...
And that is something that we feel really is very important to us, is that we understand that art is something that to a lot of people feels necessary and has turned into a luxury. And we're not trying to make what we're doing a luxury. That is why we will never withhold content.
Right.
Like, we are open, we are accessible, and we only ask that you give if you're able to. We're not trying to make anyone break the bank.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting for me, because I think a lot of the art making that I've been a part of, that I've had it, it's playing this game between income versus expenses and figuring out how to make it work. And I think generally, just as I've gotten older and older and just kind of more fucking, like, radical and, like, leftist.
I'm just the idea of, like, as I've gotten older and older.
And I'm, like, 25-year-old douchebag acting like he's the, like, in most cases, I'm the youngest person.
Anyway, are currently the youngest person.
I know. Well, anyway, it's just, you know, it's important to me, because I think that the, like, employer-employee relationship is one that is really counterintuitive to art making. And I think trying to find ways to produce...
Burping like burp over there.
All right. I just had a bunch of water. I've found that if I drink more water, if I have a little bit of headache, like a little bit of, like, the I'm tired headache, if I drink a bunch of water, I feel better. So I'm sorry that I'm, like, also gassy because of that. Anyway, I think that trying to find ways to make art outside of this capitalist mindset is really important for me, especially. And I know that that's kind of what, I mean, the model that I really like is this idea of everything being free and open and accessible. And then as people listen and appreciate and kind of become a community, the realization that part of that community can't afford to donate. And so when that is a realization that sets in on the whole, that there are different walks of life, that there are different perspectives, that there are people that are low income and there are all people that are high income, if you want to call it that, you know, it really comes down to the people that can to step in and donate for the people that can't so that we can continue to do what we're trying to do. And we're looking at doing that at most, in most ways of trying to figure out ways to do this as collectively as possible. And I mean, in that, like, you know, one of the things that we're doing is like in most cases, when we have like 6 to 10 performers on an event, something that we've produced for ourselves, we're trying to do basically a split of the door, with straight to the performers. Because for us, I think like, the commodity is the podcast, the commodity is the infrastructure. And so, donating to the show helps us support that and helps us support ourselves. But like, as far as these events are concerned, like in a lot of cases, it's really just about promoting them and working with them and supporting them. And so like, I love that, in most cases, like we're at least able to say like, yeah, you know, we're expecting 20 to 30 to 40 people at these events. Most of them are probably going to donate. And so with that, we're just going to split it with y'all because we want to make sure that you're taken care of. Because that's, I think, the thing that I think we're missing a lot is, you know, no matter what you're paying people, like, it's about recognizing that art making is also still labor, you know, and it also is still work, and it also is still very much worth something. And I mean, but it's balancing that with figuring out how you make the income, right? And so, you know, and all of that, I guess my point with all of this is just to say, like, we really appreciate everyone that is doing what they can. We appreciate everybody that's listening. And so with that, do you want to announce the first concert?
Yeah. So our first concert is June 6th at Nightcap Coffee Bar in Pilsen. It is a 7 o'clock show. And we will be doing the 24 Italian songs with 24 different singers. And this is something that we're super excited about because for those of you out there who are not familiar with the 24 Italian songs, these are songs that are considered, as one of our singers, Andrea Jones, put it, these are the gold standard of like classical song rep. They're what you start with, because they are beautiful, they're accessible, they're mostly like a pretty doable range for whoever wants to sing it, and they're just like the picture of just like the picture of accessibility, but they're beautiful music. And what was super heartening for us is that we decided on this concept for this first concert like 4 days ago or something like that. And we had another idea in mind that we're probably going to have to push back to August just because of people's schedules.
Right.
But we came up with this idea, I think 4 days ago. And we're super, super happy that so many, like, whenever we bring it up to singers, you know, whenever we ask someone to be on it,
there's kind of a light behind people's eyes that come up, oh, that's such a good idea.
Oh, that's so good. That's so exciting. And, like, so many people have so many strong feelings about these pieces. And that's what's, that, I think, is what's going to make it a great concert, is that everybody signed up for their favorite piece.
Yeah, which sometimes is the thing that is the thing they learned when they were young. And it's other times it's just, like, the one they always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't ever have a reason to do them except for your first couple years in undergrad, you know? Like, there is no... This kind of a thing, someone pulling them out, is rare. I mean, I know professional singers that'll pull them out for like their, you know,
for their Carnegie, encore.
Right. Whatever the fuck. But you know, I think
they're rarely done.
Yeah. And so what I love about it too is, just like this, just like everything, our Scoppy Studios that we do, we're going to be recording all of these.
Mm-hmm.
And so on that same vein of accessibility of making, you know, of course we want people to be there live. We want to see people to see this stuff happen in person. We'll
probably live stream it too.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
Figuring out the technology of live streaming. Anybody that's done a master's recital and tried to live stream it in the past few years knows that like, it's not an exact science.
Yeah.
it's kind of a weird thing. But we will be recording them, and we will be posting them to YouTube. And so I love the idea of, you know, I mean, some of them have some, like, world-class singers singing them and on recording, but I just love the idea of having all 25 songs in one place, because I think that's rare. I don't really know that existing anywhere else.
I mean, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I just, off the top of my head, I don't know.
Yeah. No, but we're really excited to, like, because what's cool is that the population that we're working with in terms of our singers is, we're all young singers, but we're not, you know, we're not, like, very young. Usually the population of, usually the group of singers working on these pieces are, like, college age or younger.
Yeah.
And we're all in our mid to late 20s or 30s, you know.
I would say that we're at a professional age. We just basically, yeah. It's just a bunch of singers that haven't made their break yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to say we're pre-professional.
We're professional.
Yeah, we're just grassrootsy. We're right. Regional. And so, yeah, it's going to be some really exciting, really, like, I'm so excited for the singers that we have. And we're still looking for a couple. I want to see how many.
Eight?
We're looking to fill eight more.
Eight slots.
Which is awesome. Because,
out of 24?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And some of these are fucking ringers. Like, Vittoria. Vittoria, Vittoria.
That doesn't entirely surprise me. It's, like, weirdly strophic.
Lasciatemi morire.
Which
is available.
That's a chestnut.
Fucking Nina?
Yeah.
I'm shocked no one is singing Nina. I know. It gets to that point, I'm singing Nina.
Where we have to double. I don't want to double up.
Me neither.
But, I just meant, like, we, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway. So, do you want to announce the second one?
Sure. So, the second is something I'm very excited about. I am really interested in the idea of us doing chamber instrumental music. Because I'm sure there are more of it than I know, because I'm a singer and uninformed about string and, or orchestral and instrumental music in general. But I want to, you know, kind of produce anything that I can and kind of get my feet wet in doing that, just because I love producing chamber music. And so, one of the things that I thought would be really on theme, because what we're doing generally with our programming, we're going to see how this summer goes, but for the most part, we're trying to mix ethnicity and region to season. So, for the summer, we're mostly doing Italian stuff, open to Spanish as far as, like, moving forward about what we're going to potentially do in July and August.
We're open to it.
Yeah. But so anyway, these 2 weeks are really classical music heavy, and they're actually the couple weeks in the first 2 months that are the most classical music heavy. It's not as much this way. And so in the same way that the 24 Italian songs and arias is a really good kind of sampling, if you will, of Italian song for singers, I think that what we're doing with strings, which is Vivaldi's Four Seasons, yeah. is the same way. It's really well known.
I'm so goddamn excited.
I know. I'm really excited,
so
too.
So goddamn excited.
That's yeah, I like, on a whim, reached out to Olya Prohorova, who is a awesome, awesome violinist. And I was like, listen, is there any way that you'd be willing to do this? And she was like, hell yeah. And generally, we have all the pieces except for a double bassist. Everyone has just been like, this is awesome. I'm so interested in getting involved with this. Which is so fucking cool and heartening and makes us feel like we're doing the right thing. And so what we're doing is we've stripped it to its core in the same way that we were talking earlier about the donations and talking about how we're working with compensating our performers. We're going to be doing it with six pieces, and so in that way we're kind of maximizing the donation split, and we're also I'm really interested in it because it's going to have this kind of, like, visceral, really sparse and you know, chambery feel, and that's at Redline Tap, which is cool. And I'm just
Redline Tap / but you know, they really need to get the name changed down.
It's just unfortunate timing. They, like, I think they're gonna make the official change in, like, a couple weeks as far as name is concerned. And, like, as far... I don't... It's not a huge...
Well, on the Heartland, like, when you're at the Heartland campus, they're calling it Buffalo Bar.
Right.
But I think that in promotion and, like, all of that, it's still Red Line Tap.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they just need to be like, this is what we're doing. But anyway, so that is happening there. Vivaldi Four Seasons. We're really excited about it. We are also going to record that, too, which is really cool.
So come, drink, and be silent.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing. Nightcap, for the most part, is there's no alcohol served. So it's BYOB, though.
Yeah, so bring wine and shit.
Absolutely. But Heartland has a bar, and Heartland has... it has the full access to the menu, the Heartland menu.
So here's one thing that I really, really, really want to drive home is that we are given these spaces for free.
Mm-hmm.
We are, you know, we are not paying to rent these spaces, and it is incredible that we are given that opportunity. That being said, if you come to our concert, please buy things from mm-hmm. them, like buy a drink when you're at Nightcap, grab a coffee, grab a pastry, like order something.
Right.
Like, please help these people out because they're so incredibly kind.
And generous. I mean, like, if you do a spot like this, most of the time you have to pay a cover. Sometimes there's a drink minimum. I mean, like, I've been to places in Chicago where someone's putting on their passion project in a spot, and the only reason they let them do it is... there's a 2-drink minimum or something. And so that's
and
not happening.
And there's nothing like that. So please be generous. You know, like, when you come in, you know, grab a drink, mm-hmm. order something, you know, help these people out because they're being so, so generous mm-hmm. with us. And, it's really a wonderful thing.
Cool. Do you want to do the next one, or do you want me to do the next one?
I can do the next one.
Sure.
So on June 13th, at Nightcap Coffee Bar, this is a Tuesday, we're going to be doing a recital of Rossini songs, which is so, so cool because Daniel has been working for the past year with Philip Gossett, who is the editor of the Rossini Critical Edition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not something I talk about a lot. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I'm basically like a research assistant / like I'm listed on the Rossini Critical Edition as an assistant editor.
Yeah.
Which is really fucking cool. And it's basically like my musicology game has like significantly stepped up in the last year because I was like interested in musicology before, but I like, you know, working with the fucking preeminent Rossini and Verdi scholar for a year, you understand how the industry works, and or not the industry, but you know what I mean? The field. Yeah. And so I've been so fortunate for that. And, you know, when
you have a fucking blast.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really cool.
Jesus.
Sorry, Oscar's being weird. Yeah, so when we were talking about that the kind of first segment of these performances were going to be really Italian heavy.
We weren't kidding.
No, and that was when we were talking about it when we were first planning it. I was like, well, it makes sense to do some Rossini. So the 13th is going to be the Rossini songs, and then I'm going to transition from that. Well, and I want to talk a little bit. So Tierra Burge, a good friend of mine and ours, Tierra Burge
is... Yeah, Tierra hates me.
No, she doesn't.
No, Tierra.
Bucket ducks for life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a deep cut.
That's on our fridge.
Yeah. She's going to be singing a few songs, and then... I reached out to Andrea Hansen to sing La Regata Veneziana, which I think is pretty much the like headliner, because it's a really dope song cycle.
It's in a Venetian dialect, which is cool. I've worked on those pieces before, and it's not an easy
mm-mm.
dialect.
It's pretty, it's cool. I'm really excited about that. And then Jessica Hiltebeitel. The awesome, fantastic, brilliant, edgy...
She's the best.
Boundary-pushing Jessica Hiltebeitel has in the past been known to...
A dream. She's a dream.
A dream. Kind of do gender things. And so there is a couple songs, like, named the Dirty Songs, something that I've that's always caught my eye when we're working on the songs, because I was like, that's interesting. And so then I kind of like learned more about what there actually are. And it's actually just a big joke about the Italian word for the C word for vagina.
I think we all know what the C word is.
I'm not going to say it.
Cuckold.
That's it. Yep, we are low-key alt-right over here. Yep, those libtards.
Jesus Christ. Anyway.
I also love... this is entirely a tangent. I'm going. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I've been getting into leftist politics. I'm on a few like dank meme stashes for like Democratic Socialists of America stuff, and so I'm learning more about the political spectrum, and I'm learning more about the extremes of the political spectrum, and it's just so interesting to me to be in these spaces where the term liberal, like its accurate definition, is being used, and so it's I'm finding myself kind of like self-policing like what I actually mean now, because the idea of liberal is just purely freedom, and in a lot of cases, a lot of like neo-commies, if that's even a thing, like new age communists and collectivists and stuff, will critique a lot of liberals because it'll kind of like lean into that like financial liberalism thing, which I think is really an interesting thought.
Yeah, and it's been really fun for me because I'll describe myself as a liberal and he'd be like, what do you really mean by that? And I'll be like, shut up, I'm tired. It's been really good.
I gotta say, as much as that is probably annoying and frustrating, you are a delight and really put up with a lot of my... Because, I mean, I really love it, and I think, like, I missed a boat on, like getting a political science minor or something like that. Because it's definitely interesting, and it makes the looking at history so much easier, because you really start to understand, like, what happened with Stalin, like, what happened with Lenin, what happened with Trotsky, what happened in China. And you're looking at these things and going, like, oh, so this is the ideologies, and I'm really starting to understand them. And then you get why, like, the public got into a fever pitch, and then how some authoritarian leader was able to turn that fever pitch into, like, a totalitarian regime. And, you know, I mean, and it's those kinds of things are super applicable to what's going on today. What does that sign mean?
Pause.
Oh. All right, squeaky chair fixed. I'm also not talking as directly close to the mic. Anyway.
That could have been such a smooth transition.
I chose for it not to be. I you know what? I don't care. Y'all, if you're listening to this show, and if you've been listening to this show, you deserve to hear my, you know, the candor. You deserve that entirely. So anyway, message me about political theory. I'm super into it. I'm interested in expanding my knowledge and talking about it with other people. Karl Marx is a hero.
Squeaky chair not fixed.
I don't know what to say. It's gonna be a squeaky. Right. Shout out Karl Marx.
Cool.
Okay, so June 15th. June 15th is the second night in the Rossini week. And so the kind of headline for that night is Beatitudes, which is not a setting of Trump's text, right? But it's a setting of the Beatitudes.
Yeah, so Donald Trump tweeted at one point about what a good Christian he is. And then Anthony Barese, the composer of the piece, mm-hmm. Basically set...
Have not met him. He's been working a bit with Chicago Summer Opera. He is a intellectual.
He's
type
opera. He's the head of Southwest Opera Southwest.
Head of Opera Southwest, translation guru of sorts.
Yeah, he's done some conducting at Sarasota, that young artist program / opera company. But what he did is he set the Beatitudes, and you know, basically was refuting Donald Trump's claim that he's a good Christian.
I think to some extent there is a layer of tweet quoting too, but I'm not entirely sure.
So this is not a piece that Daniel or I are performing on. So what's fun about that is that it'll be as much a surprise
to us as it is to you.
Yeah.
But it'll be really cool. And it comes highly recommended, is what I will say.
Yeah, we're really excited mm-hmm. about it. It's going to be a short piece. And so, also...
Yeah, what is it, like 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's short.
So we'll be pairing it with Rossini choral chamber music that we will be singing on, that I'm going to be picking out in the next couple days,
maybe. Like, can you do that tomorrow?
Yeah, maybe. I'll get around to it, hopefully.
Can that happen, like, soon?
I'm in a weird scenes program right now. Shout out that. Come to it or not. Don't.
I won't.
It's tomorrow night, Wednesday night.
I have rehearsal.
I mean, the people that are doing it are really doing great work. But it's in like a small black box studio.
Cool.
And it's just like doing like the act one finale of Cosi and the sextet from Giovanni, but like only the first half of it.
Oh, they cut the second part of it?
Yeah.
They officially did? That's a bummer.
Let's move on. So I'll at some point tomorrow, in between my kind of like dress rehearsals and stuff, I will take a look again at the chamber music so that we can actually solidify that. So that's the second week, and then our third week.
My turn.
Go for it.
Our third week, we are going to be doing a premiere.
I'm pretty sure it's a premiere. The composer shared it, and I'll look at the thing.
So it may or may not be a premiere. Daniel will interrupt me and tell me if it is a premiere. It is a piece by composer Daniel Felsenfeld, and it is called She After.
Mm-hmm.
It will be performed by the Indomitable.
It is a world premiere.
It is a world premiere. Oh, that's so exciting.
Daniel Felsenfeld's She After with soprano Emily Cox, and I... used the wrong pronunciation or punctuation. It is she comma after. I put she
dash
slash after. I'll maybe fix that.
I'm probably
not going to fix it on the poster, but I probably will fix it in the event. But it's cool.
Yeah.
Because it is basically, it's a play on the female psyche to some extent, from my understanding of it. And so it's very feminist.
I mean, it's called She After.
Well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean... So, for She After is a... it's three related but separable monodramas for soprano and piano trio, all of which are about women exiting complicated situations. Ibsen's Nora, Alice still in Wonderland, and an adult film star about to do her final shoot. Daniel, the composer, was looking for small opera companies, but we ended up picking it up. So that's really cool. And he's actually flying in to do it. Not to do it, but to be there for the premiere, which is really cool.
So
we'll probably, honestly, we'll probably have an interview with him, too,
because
I don't think it's that long.
Emma's going to sing it,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll talk to Emma and Daniel about it. And that's going to be... so cool. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
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 And then our final June show is going to be at Redline Tap on the 22nd, and it's going to be a poetry night.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, is going to be our most free-form night, where we're going to reach out to poets. I have some coworkers who are poets. I'm gonna see if they're interested in coming out and just reading some stuff and maybe like having a discussion about it. And yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that'll be really cool.
Very little planning.
You're excited about that?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Daniel, what has our life been for the past couple weeks? Of course I'm excited for the thing that we don't have to fucking plan.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I'm just glad that so many things are, like, in place.
Yeah, you know? Me too. We've got a whole slew of stuff for July, but we'll keep that under wraps until later this month.
I would say the highlight, two highlights to just keep in mind. I don't want to get too in-depth in them. The first is the 4th of July block party.
Stop calling it a block party. It is so not going to be a block party.
I want it to be a block party.
Yeah, well, okay. Here's how we can make this a block party, ladies and gentlemen, and other genders. Oh, that could have been better. Anyway.
Y'all. All of you.
Y'all. If you want this to be a block party, if you want this to be a blowout, we need hard RSVPs from like 70 people.
Right. Maybe we can make a Facebook event and then...
I'm also overwhelmed at the thought of organizing a block party in a neighborhood that we are not familiar with.
All right, so we're going to have a 4th of July party. we're looking for...
As Maureen airs out her anxieties.
We have a few leads on kind of different entertainment things we're going to do, but I also really love the idea of it having kind of a more informal bent and just kind of, you know, talking, just hanging out.
Hanging out, drinking.
Right.
We'll pick up some cheap booze. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it'll probably just be like a couple cases of PBR.
Yeah.
And then I'll pick up some cheap wine.
Yeah. So there's that. And then the other highlight for July time is our representation series.
Yeah.
Which we have all the dates confirmed for that, but we're just kind of like, we want to give it a big berth. B-E-R-T-H, not weird. where we, you know, talk really about what it means to do work from different cultures, how to make it accessible, make it relevant.
Who should be doing it?
Who should be doing it? You know, it's... I love that we're gonna, you know, dive into the deep end of representation in classical music. And I love that there are so many people that are interested in that. And I think that it could be a tricky thing to navigate, but I think we're really capable. I think we have accurately reached out to the resources that we need to make it happen in the most respectful and appropriate way.
Well, and I think that, well, our first one that we've talked about a lot on the show, and we're actually going to be talking more about with Sam Adeguile later this week, mm-hmm. is the Latinx concert. We've plugged that a bunch of times, and so I feel comfortable talking about that. We're going to get more into depth with Sam. We're going to talk to her Thursday night, so we'll probably publish that on Friday. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that might be our only other episode this week, just because it's a weird week by mm-hmm. us. So sorry in advance for that. Yeah, but...
So, the only other thing I really want to talk about today, just because it's been grinding my gears.
Oh, wait. Let's like, tie this up nicely.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is something that we've been working our asses off on for, like, a month. The pieces...
I think two. I think, honestly, probably two.
Yeah. 2 months. And it's something that we're really, really excited about. It's something that I'm so relieved and amazed and... excited by, like, I can't believe we're pulling this off. Like, mm-hmm. earlier this year when we were talking about doing two performances a week all summer, I was completely overwhelmed by the concept. We had a meeting at one point with Emma Cox because she's doing a lot to help us put this together, because she's just a whirlwind of energy and organization, and it's crazy. But we had a meeting with her where Daniel and Emma were just like blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all right, clearly I'm not equipped to handle this because I am completely overwhelmed by this. And so I think that this should just, and since then I've like calmed down and realized that like, what's so nice about it is that we're dealing with these amazing artists mm-hmm. who are showing up prepared. And yep. so we just have to facilitate. The hard part was all the prep, and that's done. Mm-hmm. So, like, please come. Please enjoy yourselves. If you're able to give, please do. If not, then thank you so much for coming and lending your support and supporting our mission and for cheering on these incredible artists. And yeah, we can't wait to see you all.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'm also really excited about it. I'm sorry, I'm starting to get a little tired. So I want to warm myself up, wake myself up with, basically, I want to talk about the 2020 election. And I know that's a really weird thing to talk about, but like, people are talking about it. Like, they're like shopping around Hillary Clinton to be the next Democratic candidate.
Yeah, because what we really need is another 2016 election.
Look, and I'm not even, look, I voted for Hillary Clinton. I like Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, me enough. Too.
But the thing is, there's a reason why Hillary Clinton didn't get elected. And I think if we don't recognize that and don't realize what that is...
Well, part of the reason that Hillary Clinton was not elected was was voter suppression and racist districting and the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. Because, lest we forget, she won the popular vote.
Well, yeah, she did win the popular vote. But the other side of it, too, is like a lot of these states that went red were willing to because of the fact that the working class has been neglected in a major way,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. And I mean, a party that was very much about the working class is very much not about the working class. And I mean, the thing that really kind of like gets the working class excited is, the thing is, Obamacare, although it is an obvious better step than no healthcare, was shopped by Fox News to the working class as the expensive option for healthcare. And I don't think that, and I don't mean undereducated to say that they're not smart or not capable of being educated. I just mean that, you know, there is systemic issues in education in a lot of these regions. The undereducated right was not informed about like what the history of healthcare really looks like, what the healthcare climate actually is, and so we've been working with Obamacare for so long.
I'm not gonna chalk it up to lack of education, although that I think is a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of it is that.
Well, Cole. Well,
I think that a lot of it was. In terms of just like healthcare and Fox News's, it, you know, hand in that, a lot of it had to do with where these people live and what they're exposed to. I think that we as people who live in a city are exposed to a lot more nuanced media. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you live in the middle of nowhere, basically you're walking into your diner or wherever, or your barbershop or something, where on the TV is Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to church or you do whatever, and these, you know, extreme right views are being espoused. And so perhaps it's not lack of education, it's just what people are being exposed to. It's like how Donald Trump gets his information. Mm-hmm. He just watches Fox News.
Yeah, it's like accessibility to information.
Right.
And I mean, that's kind of the other side of it too. And that's where I was saying with, well, what about coal? Is like, that's the thing that I think a lot of so many people don't realize that as far as the looking for a jobs solution conversation is concerned, a lot of the right is, first off, it's a conversation the right wants to have way more than the left does. The left, there are parts of the left that of course want to have the we need more jobs conversation, but the person that was answering the jobs question was not Hillary Clinton, it was Donald Trump. And as terrible as some of the other things he was saying, he was also saying about how he wanted to bring back coal jobs, and he wanted to bring back oil jobs, and he wanted to bring back industry jobs. And of course he's not doing that, or maybe to some extent he is, and in other ways he is, and whatever. The thing is, there are progressive, there are clean energy jobs to be made and things like that, which all of this conversation sets up. The main thing that I really wanted to talk about was, besides Hillary Clinton potentially being shopped as a 2020 candidate, Mark Zuckerberg is doing a lot of things that are very presidential, but not running for president. And I'm really like, weirded out by it conceptually. But I'm
queasy about it. I don't want Mark Zuckerberg to run for president.
He seems to be having a lot of progressive tenets. I mean, like...
I don't care. Here's why. Here's why. We've learned from Donald Trump that a businessman running this country doesn't fucking work.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why some fucking Ponzi Silicon Valley asshole is going to do a better job. Like, we've learned that this country, with its agencies bent on service,
mm-hmm.
cannot be run from the mindset of profit. Because I've said this 10,000 times, but the fucking Postal Service cannot be evaluated based on profit. It is evaluated on how reliably it delivers the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need someone with an eye for service, for public service, to be running this country. And so Mark fucking Zuckerberg isn't gonna do shit.
But I mean, the thing is, like, the ideologies that run on kind of like public service ideals are to some extent progressivism, but mostly socialism and like collectivism, and to the extreme extent is communism. And I think that there are movements. The thing is, what Zuckerberg and what Trump have in common, I think is maybe less than what seems at face value, but what the main thing they have in common is capitalism. And I think it's this...
And a lack of political experience.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Which I think is most important.
Right, but I also think it brings up this idea of like...
No, I want to stay on the track of why Mark Zuckerberg should not run for president, because I do not think he should run for president. The whole Donald Trump, his trip he just took was a disaster, mainly because he knows nothing about how policy works. When he was at that NATO summit, why it was such a nightmare is that he knows nothing about how fucking NATO works. Mm-hmm. He thought he was the head of NATO. He thought he was the head of NATO. He's not.
He's not.
And he also just like demonstrated time and time again, he turned Germany against us.
One of our longest running allies, he turned against us. I agree with you. And the reason, the thing I was just going to say is that it's, piggybacking on why I don't think Mark Zuckerberg should be president.
Thank God. For a second, I thought you were saying that Mark Zuckerberg should run for president. No. I was like, what is,
who are you? I was just, the only thing I was going to say is
drinking
there's this.
Drinking the fucking Facebook Kool-Aid.
The thing that I was going to say is that the, what we're getting a lot of is, trying to make capitalism work. They're calling it conscious capitalism. And to an extent, that's an interesting thought, because one of the things that Mark Zuckerberg just came out as... But this is the thing, is like he comes out on these things that are like so fucking political. Like, he just came out pro a universal basic income.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty aware of what that means from following... I like following fucking socialist and commie... things for the past year. I like have a pretty solid understanding of what that would actually entail.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you follow any socialist dank meme stashes?
I do, and they're very informative. But so the thing is,
sorry, I just wanted to make it clear that you follow some socialist dank meme stashes.
I do follow
because I'm not sure that you've brought that up before.
I know, and I'm trying to think of a better way to put it that makes it sound less not legitimate. But the thing is that I've learned a shit ton, and the thing that I've learned is like, universal basic income was actually introduced by a libertarian. It was originally supposed to be a negative income tax, was the concept. And so it very much is in this neoliberal, financial liberalism ilk of making capitalism work. Because the idea is that it's like cutting tax to the utmost, like to the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what universal basic income is meant to do. But it's interesting because it very much falls in this conscious socialist capitalism, meaning that socialist is the adjective, but it is still capitalism. And it's something that I think it's Denmark, a city in Denmark tried to implement a universal basic income. The results are promising. But it's definitely not... It's interesting. I think one of the things... I brought it up to you in the car. And one of the things that you were saying was...
Yeah, what I said... Because at its base, like, the idea of, like, no matter what happens, making... like, let's say because it's a round number, like $1,000 a month, no matter what, being guaranteed that level of security of like, hey, no matter what I'm doing, I will at least be making $12,000 a year, which of course is not like livable, but it's like at least something. It's something that you could buy food with.
Yeah.
And
it's, so the idea is that it's like entirely, it's not late, like it's not labor. It's not like a minimum income. It's just that the government would give you a check for $1,000 a month.
Yeah, right. Which, you know, would basically, it's just leveling the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
It's guaranteeing people housing. It's right. guaranteeing people, you know, basic needs. Like, basic needs to live.
Mm-hmm.
With, of course, the implication, you know, the recommendation that they also work.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. But my first thought is that given our society and given inflation, and my first thought was rent.
Mm-hmm.
Of if I'm a landlord / an asshole, and I know that all of my tenants can now afford, are making at least $1,000 a month, probably more. That means that I can charge at least $1,000 a month, mm-hmm, for the rent. No matter, baseline rent is $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
Probably more. And so that's my reaction, is I feel like the market would fluctuate. Like, I feel like inflation would react, mm-hmm, to that.
Yeah, and I mean, and that was kind of my, like, initial reaction, was that, well, it's like, well, then we just shouldn't be charging for land and food. Like, Well, so here's kind of where my head is at with that. I'm not saying that's my final answer on it. I'm just saying that the thing is that in a lot of ways, a lot of things that conscious capitalism is doing is really a band-aid to a bigger problem. And the bigger problem is, like, the source of the problem, let's say, is that there is a very logical argument that capitalism does not work. And it's because of the idea that capitalism implies that there is an infinite amount of profit to be made from a finite amount of resources. We only have so many resources, and capitalism, meaning when I say capitalism, I mean specifically the idea that we have a owner and are an employer and an employee relationship.
Owner.
A person that owns the land and a person that works the land. And in a lot of ways, capitalism is just a rebranding of feudalism. To some extent, and I mean, obviously there are, like, terrible aspects, other aspects to slavery, and it's not a complete direct rebranding.
No, but and here's why not, is that, okay, first of all, your suggestion that land and food should be free. Food being free is something that I could stand behind. Moody, chill. I know, you're a big old socialist, but you need to relax. Food being free, I stand behind, because food is something that you need to live. But with land being free, I don't think that that's... I disagree with that. Because if land is not free, then what... How do you own it? You know what I mean? No, because let's say that I own this apartment building. Someone could just come in and say, well, I own this apartment building. What right do I have? Like, how can I say that I own it if I didn't, like, purchase it? Like, what's stopping someone from just, like, ripping up my lease or my deed? I don't think
that having claim on living in a specific place is, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's the idea of ownership being the reason that you make a profit on a thing is problematic, because it's all about means of production. If you own land and then you're not working the land, but you're getting all the profits from the work being done on that land, that's a problem. Landlordship. If you own a building and people pay you rent to live in it and you're not doing any work on the, I mean, sure, to some extent, landlordships do work. But the thing is that they set rent and they set what their profits are going to be arbitrarily. There is no reason that. I mean, sure, taxation is a real thing.
I think that they base it off of, like, tax. And I think that the rule is pretty much that they do it double the tax.
Anyway.
No, I mean, I'm just saying that in terms of land ownership, I think that that's something that is... I think that goes beyond capitalism, honestly, is land ownership.
But I think the idea, the thing that I really like is important to me to make a point of is the idea of profit and the idea of how that looks and the idea of a surplus is inherently capitalistic and is inherently problematic for the worker and inherently problematic for the people that... For the people that don't own the land, for renters, it's inherently problematic. And so
I think, honestly, I disagree with you about renting and, like, land ownership stuff. No, but if we're talking about, like, an actual business, like, if we're talking about, like, a restaurant or like a company where the CEO or something is sitting around, like, having conversations about how great the product is and they're not actually churning out the product. Because I'm sure this is something that I'm sure everyone who's worked any job can relate to, specifically restaurants, where when, like, if you're working a shift and the owner of the restaurant comes in and, like, try, and it's busy and they, like, try their hand at helping out, they're just in the way. Like, they do not at all contribute to the production of the product. And so for them to be getting most of the profits is not fair, because the employees are the ones doing all the work and they're just making fucking minimum wage or something.
Right.
Like, they're not even making enough to make rent.
And so the other extension that I wanted to go with this, and kind of I think this brings up the idea of the universal basic income, but it's the idea that automation is majorly playing a huge part in the workforce, and automation is playing a huge part in how we're looking at workers and how we're looking at labor. Because what is happening is that, as you know, there are machines that make it so that half of the amount of labor needs to be done. What companies will tend to do is to expand profits. They will lay off half of their workforce, when in reality, they could hire the same amount of people for the same amount of time, still run their business just as well, but those workers would only have to work half the time. And so that, because of the fact that profits are, like, capitalism is inherently works to make the most profits for the board of directors, for the CEOs, that is very problematic, because we are working more and more towards, I mean, just like there is this deep-rooted fear of globalization for conservatives, there is a deep-rooted fear of automation. Because in a lot of ways, like, and I am in no way trying to be alarmist and, like, we're going to be living in an AI,
simulation. I think we're really far off from that. No, but that is something that is very real in the industry that I'm most familiar with, which is restaurants. Like, the place I'm working right now, they're extremely concerned with labor costs. Because for a while, because they were training a bunch of people and because it was shitty and rainy outside and we weren't getting as much business, like, labor costs were turning up to be like 50% of the revenue,
right,
for a day, which is not doable. Like, that is a horrible, like, for a business.
Yeah, and I think it's different with a starting business too.
Yes and no.
Well, I mean, as far as, like, the conversation we're having, my point is I'm not condemning, no. I'm not condemning your place of work.
Nor am I. Nor did I think you were. But I what I'm saying is, like, labor costs are something that is, like, the constantly plaguing businesses. And so the idea of automation is very appealing, you know, as someone who, like, hears all the time at work about, oh, like, we got to cut labor costs. It's like, No, I totally get that. And I understand why automation is tempting. And so that's why, like, it, the technology is a really is really far off, but the mindset's there. Mm-hmm. The mindset is absolutely there.
To that, just get rid of labor entirely.
To just get, not entirely.
But mostly.
But yeah. Mostly. Like, to I mean. To
expand profit.
Because I think that what we have going, okay, I think that what we have going for us is, like, that we're human and that we can relate.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, that that's what's holding back, you know, the fucking robot revolution. You want to know how I know it's 11:30? Because I just said something about the robot revolution.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you've liked what you've listened to, if you liked what we're working on over the summer...
what a harsh transition.
It's all right. Please subscribe to us on iTunes under Scopy Mag, if you haven't already, or wherever you get podcasts. Throw us a subscribe, throw us a review. That's always super helpful. If you haven't already, like us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Scopy Magazine. The website is scopymag.com.
We need to do a shout out.
Oh, we do need to do a shout out.
We need to do a shout out.
Do that during donations. Let me finish the social media. Instagram and Twitter at Scopy Mag.
Shout out. We have a new donor. It is my dear, lovely, amazing friend, Lindsay Falbo. She and I got our first apartment in Baltimore together. It was a fourth floor walk up that had one air conditioner in the living room. And so by, you know, come 3 a.m, we would both be sprawled out in the living room with the air conditioner on, just like spread eagled on the floor. We've been friends for like 10 years and it's like, I love her very dearly. And when I saw that donation came in, I was just like, oh my God, really?
Yeah.
And
thank
like,
you so much, Lindsay.
Yeah. You're amazing. Thank you so much for your generosity. You're fantastic. Yeah. So if you become a donor, you could get an equally heartfelt shout out from yours truly and Mr. Daniel Johansson, because it really does mean the world to us, these donations. And as we said at the top of the show, we totally understand that not everybody can donate. And that is completely fine because there are things that I want to donate to that I just can't.
Right.
That I can't. I see GoFundMes. I see, you know, I consume media that I just can't support. And right. If you can't support, and I'll do my normal thing that I do at the end now. If you can't support, then please listen. You know, please continue to consume what we're providing. Please participate. You know, send us emails. You know, write us a review on iTunes. You know, just come to our events. You know, please help us out in that way by like filling these venues that have been so generous. And share. Please tell people about us. Tell your rich uncle, tell your poor cousins, like tell everybody, you know, anyone who you think would enjoy what we're doing, please tell them about it. We want as many people listening as possible because if we didn't think that what we were doing was worthwhile, we wouldn't be doing it. So, head to our website, scopymag.com, go to our about section. You can either do a monthly donation, which is what will get you a shout out, a la Lindsay's. Or if you do a one-time donation, then we'll reach out to you personally and we'll say, hey, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. And if you give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
And come to our shit!